These are the droids you're looking for.
Over here!
Death Star alert!
You're looking for.
This is madness.
It blew my mind when I read about it.
No, it's 100% going to be the best film in the franchise.
This is madness. Star Wars is only now starting.
Did you hear that? Did you hear that?
These are the droids you're looking for.
Did you hear that? Did you hear that? You talking?
These are the droids
I
you're
felt
looking
nauseous
for.
With just pure excitement.
These are the droids you're looking for.
Over here.
Why isn't it December 15th already?
And then I saw the Porg for the first time speaking. And I'll tell you what, it really whets the appetite.
The droids you're looking for.
This is madness.
Welcome back to The Droids You're Looking For, a Star Wars podcast. Alongside Chris Ryan and Sam, I am Mike and glad to be back. But for those of you who questioned this podcast a week ago and were wondering whether or not you should return after the disclaimer-filled edition, we thank you for coming back and giving us another shot. I don't know what happened between Ryan, Chris, and Sam. They let this thing get off the rails, but now we're back to a normal podcast. Guys, what do you have to say for yourself?
Hey, we had fun. But
sometimes sometimes things take on a life of their own, you know?
I'm just really sorry. sorry, Mike.
Right.
I appreciate
it. I was genuinely, it's the first time in my life I was genuinely afraid of Mike. Where I was like, I don't know how this is gonna go over at all.
No.
And like Mike is like kind of Mike board. Is the CEO of this whole thing, so he could he could give any of us the axe. And
I have the kill switch ready to go at any time.
Yeah, right. Pull the plug.
Well, Chris, we are fortunate to be joined by another guest this week. And I know you've been giving the rousing introductions, so take it away.
All right, here we go. Well, our next guest is an actor and comedian who is currently a series regular on Fox's Lethal Weapon, playing the LAPD medical examiner known as Scorsese. Please welcome to the pod, Jonathan Fernandez.
Whoa! That's it.
Nice.
Yeah. Welcome. No, thanks. It's awesome. It's always fun to be in a safe environment to talk about nerd stuff.
Exactly.
We're thrilled to have you. We just need to ask up front, as we ask all our guests, have you lived with Chris?
This is a hard question to answer because at one point we were in this like duplex thing. And we saw each other. There was only the duplex. So, I mean, I guess by definition, that's only really two single family homes.
Right.
And I was in one of those. And so it kind of felt like a roommate situation. But I guess technically on paper, it was not.
Yeah. So it's a technical.
You two saw each other every day.
Pretty much, probably.
I think it's safe to say that you saw each other every day.
Right. The doors weren't locked.
You wouldn't say, like, if you were, if the neighbor was a stranger, you wouldn't consider them a roommate, just you see them every day.
Yeah, no, I agree with Jonathan. That's flawed logic, Sam. I don't consider all my coworkers roommates.
A roommate is a stranger that you like.
So, Jonathan,
I think we're pretty far off.
Jonathan, did Chris just always introduce himself with some sort of Star Wars fact? How much did he spend his time trying to bring you into as much Star Wars fandom as he possesses?
That's a hard one to answer too. Because
I feel like the new wave wasn't like hitting yet. And I might have been like on the downswing at that time.
Yeah, it was in the dark period after the prequels. And before we knew that JJ was doing another movie.
Yeah. So it wasn't like it wasn't on the mind.
I feel like Chris's downswing is everyone else's maximum overdrive, though.
Well, you know, to give Chris credit though, there's a lot of I think he is more well rounded than maybe what he gives off, because there was a lot of things that we would geek out about a lot of things. Yeah. It didn't feel like anything skewed towards Star Wars too abrasively.
Right.
Oh, my gosh. This is news.
Yeah. It's a different point.
It's a first.
Chris, what else you geek out about?
Yeah.
I'm turning into a pretty good character witness for you, Chris.
Yeah, I like this. This is great. And it's on record, too. So this is perfect. Thanks, John.
Chris, what are your other things that you geek out about?
quit.
Lord of the Rings.
I've never heard you say Lord of the Rings before this moment.
Not once.
God of War.
God of War? Have you finished the new one?
We did a lot of that.
Chris, did you finish the new God of War yet?
No, I haven't finished it yet.
I guarantee you he bought it, though.
Yeah,
Jonathan,
I got mine first hand, I think. I think you asked me about this, Chris, and like it's still on top of my PS4 untouched because I made the mistake of starting Hollow Knight. And I thought Hollow Knight was going to be like a quick platformer, and then 30 hours later, I'm like, what do they do?
Here's the thing, though, Jonathan. You're on a major network television show, and you're a busy man. Chris just didn't play God of War. His apparently top three geeking out franchise.
I was thinking of things that we did together at that time. And then also, you guys had that lightsaber that was always on your mantle in your apartment. I remember. Yeah,
and we just get together and look at it.
Yeah, we just
it was pretty impressive back then. That was like the first one that actually had the light shoot up the
yeah. That was the real
those came
handle.
Up on the last episode too. I remember when those came out around like episode 3, they were a huge deal.
Yeah, I couldn't believe it when I first saw it, to be honest. It was like very new technology.
Yeah,
I could name all the kids in my high school who had them, but I won't do that here for legal reasons.
It's pretty good.
So, Jonathan, why don't you take us back to your early Star Wars experience, early Star Wars memories, how you got into the franchise, and an earliest recollection you have.
You want to hear something very weird? I think that the first time I actually knew anything about Star Wars was from Muppet Babies. And I think, like, I kept on, you know how they would always, they had that gag that they would, like, open their closet, and it was, like, some movie was playing in the closet.
Yeah, oh, my God.
Yeah, some live movie.
Memories are really rushing back right now. I haven't thought about that forever.
Yeah, and for some reason, like, I remember, like, whenever I think about Star Wars, like, earliest memories, that's one of them. And like, the same time, so I guess I got into it pretty late, because the same Christmas I got, like, there was, like, 5 albums I wanted, and one of them was Stone Temple Pilots, Nirvana, Nevermind, and Ugly Kid Joe, some other like terrible 90s band, and also a VHS box set of the original trilogy, which was, I think, their first. It was like a special edition that like Leonard Maltin did like an introduction on each one of them.
For those who remember.
Oh yeah.
For those who are experiencing for the very first
exactly,
time.
Exactly. I guess the definitive VHS ones, and and then it was a slippery slope, because I just watched those over and over and over, and got so many posters, and went to this place in the Stroudsburg Mall of my town in Pennsylvania where I'm from, where it was called Rockin' Willie's at the time. And Rockin' Willie's would have all...
They let kids in there?
Yeah. Well, actually, I'm sorry. Back then it was called Willie T. Haas, which was the guy's name. And in there, it was just like that place. It was a better Spencer's. Like Spencer's, you know how like leans a little blue? Mm-hmm. And but this place was more like, you know, it had like the neon Hendrix posters, and it had like, you know, the it had like earrings, like gauged earrings, and like that kind of thing. And they had this whole back room that had a black light posters and t-shirts, and a lot of them were like Star Wars heavy, and I remember getting like a Yoda one, but that was all within the like probably within like months or within the same year of each other,
right?
I think it's interesting because a lot of Star Wars directors now are taking their earliest influence of experiencing the trilogy and then working that into their new Star Wars film, which means if you ever made a Star Wars movie, there would be some sort of Muppet Babies reference, and I really want to see that movie.
You know, they're doing that again. They're coming, they're rebooting Muppet Babies.
Are they really?
Thank God.
Yes, wow. I mean, literally everything. They just announced yesterday Rugrats, and they're also going to do a Rugrats live-action movie.
A live-action movie?
Literally everything. Everything is going to be back.
Are they going to mocap them, and it's going to be like Tintin?
I don't know, dude. I didn't even look it up, really. I just saw the headline.
Is it going to be like Battle Angel, where they're like actually done to the proportions of the cartoon, but like
it'd be
photorealistic?
It'd
be like, that's wild.
Yeah, it would
yeah.
be truly grotesque.
All right, so you got the Muppet Babies. You got the posters.
Oh, also, sorry, real quick, I wanted to say, like, that Yoda t-shirt I got, the reason I had no job at the time, and my mother bought it for me because she lost a bet, and the bet was that I could watch, there was an hour block where they played, however long America's Funniest Home Videos is, like, whether, I forget if it's a half hour or an hour, and either way, there was 2 back-to-back episodes, and I bet my mother that I could watch the whole thing without laughing or smiling once.
That's an amazing bet.
Yeah, and then obviously I won because the show's terrible, and then that's why I got that first Yoda shirt.
That's amazing.
How old were you at this point?
Dude, who knows? Too old.
Chris loves 26. AFV.
I'm a big fan, Jonathan.
I mean, so, all right, so how did they, what is it now? Because, like, with, YouTube is AFV.
Yeah, it's basically, I mean, now there's, like, so many channels on YouTube where you can get that, and, like, they don't have to have the voices on them, and there's way better options for fail videos now.
I heard a piece, I think it was on NPR or something, about how the guy who created AFV tried to sue YouTube just for putting so much of his material up.
Wow, that's interesting.
That's hilarious.
Was it Bob Saget? Like,
do they still make new AFVs?
They do.
That's unbelievable.
Jonathan, if you would have lived at the house one more year, you would have found out that's another passion of mine. So that's...
Who's the host now?
Is this still Bergeron?
I think Bergeron does the Dancing with the Stars. I don't know who the host is now, honestly. I have not seen it.
Oh, wait, it might be Alfonso Ribeiro.
Yes, it is. You are absolutely right. Yes, exactly who it is. I saw it was on at like a bar or something, and it's a funny show to put on at a bar.
Chris's number four franchise.
That's it. You're gonna find out so much about me in this pod.
Chris has like stopped what we are doing, made me sit down. Like turned on his projector so that he can pull up an old AFV that he's like referencing.
I don't think this is.
I now understand.
So this is not a joke. This is just like what he does with Star Wars to people.
He's secretly recording an AFV podcast. I now understand why Chris has a tattoo on his right arm that's an American flag that underneath it just says "This is you." I didn't get it. I didn't understand what it was saying until now.
Yeah.
I forgot about that. Yeah.
It's a very subtle thing. Jonathan, you're a bit of an artist. I've seen you've done some board designs and that kind of thing, right?
Yeah.
I've seen has the artwork of Star Wars ever influenced you, like the Ralph McQuarrie, that kind of thing, or I don't know how far into the weeds you've gotten with that, but
design-wise? The only person I really got into that also, I mean, the only artist I got into that was also a Star Wars person is the dude who did the posters, Drew Struzan.
Oh, sure.
And he would, he did basically everything that George Lucas and Steven Spielberg have ever done. He's done like that photorealistic painting. Yeah. And, but outside of that, like the comics, I don't really know that well. And, and art wise, I guess outside of the video games, I don't really know that much of Star Wars art.
Right. And you mentioned the video games. I know you're a big gamer. I mentioned God of War before. There's one of my favorite franchises. We played like through all of, I feel like there was a stint where we just like played through all of them. Wasn't there like the new one came out or something?
Yeah.
So Star Wars video games are pretty prolific. Has there ever been one or anything that you kind of latched on to or anything like that?
Yeah, the one I played start to finish, I guess multiple times. Oh, actually, there's two. The first one is Super Return of the Jedi for the Super Nintendo.
Oh, man.
Dude.
Yeah.
And that's possibly, one of the best games of all time.
It was so difficult.
They re-released the Super Star Wars on the PS4 recently. It was probably 3 years ago. And I couldn't even get through the first level.
It was
so hard. And I used to play that every Saturday.
I don't think I played Super Star Wars, but I did play a little bit of Empire Strikes Back. But the Return of the Jedi one I played a lot.
Yeah.
And that game, I think to this day, is really a very excellent platformer. And also the vehicle stuff in it was like, dude, when you were... I remember being blown away, even years later, just like how they did the Lando Death Star scene, driving through the Death Star and being able to just use like the L&R buttons, the ship go, tilt its axis. I was just like, this game is incredible, man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's always been the dream as a kid too, is like, how can I be in this movie? At that time, it was like the closest thing you could get to.
I remember with that game, it just blew my mind that you could like deflect lasers with a lightsaber.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
I was like, oh my God, it's like being a Jedi.
Yeah, and also the graphics were good. Like, it was very, to bring up another vehicle scene, like the Forest Moon of Endor part, like when you're just on the speeders, which is like, I mean, it's awesome. Like, it really doesn't look that different from, Battlefront. I mean, I know obviously that's a huge hyperbolic statement, but like,
right.
for it's almost it's just like how far ahead of they were themselves.
Right. It's like yeah, the same mechanics were there. It was like the concept was there. It's just the graphics got a little shinier.
Yeah. Yeah, I played through that a couple times and also hard pressed to remember it. I think it was technically Dark Forces 2.
Okay.
But it was the one with Jedi Knight, that game.
Yes. Yep. Exactly. You could like wield a lightsaber in first person or something, right?
Yeah, it was the first time you could do that. It was for the PC, and the coolest part about that was it was I think one of the first games, I don't think it was the first, but one of the first games that were influenced by your decision making. So you could either be virtuous with your power and become, mm-hmm. You know, part of the light side of the Force, or you could be bad and just like by the it just like accumulates how many casualties you would accumulate, you know, and then if you did a certain amount, then you would clearly start becoming more of a Sith Lord,
right?
And then that would influence what powers you had, obviously, and that was like mind-boggling because it was just like, you know, really realistic for the time.
Right.
Was that a LucasArts game, I'm guessing?
Yeah.
Like, were these all... Yeah, that feels like... I'm not very versed in the Star Wars games specifically, but just, like, my familiarity with, like, all the stuff that LucasArts did, it feels like that was very much up their alley of, like they did interesting, like, back-end stuff on all their games about, like, somehow tracking your character or, like, things like you would learn through the game. I don't know. I just remember, I think like LucasArts has a lot of cool games, I feel like, but I don't know if a lot of them are Star Wars games. I don't know. I guess it sounds like it, but
all those were pretty popular from my memory, like the Dark Forces and TIE Fighter. And I forget what there was one called X-Wing 2, but I forget the other ones too that were just like really. Oh, and I never got into Knights of the Old Republic, and they look awesome.
Yeah, there's just so many options, and they're like all part of that Outer World stuff that like expands the universe.
But that's interesting that you bring up Knights of the Old Republic, because that's key to that game, is making the choices to decide whether or not you're going to be in the light or the dark side. And I feel like that's vital to any first person or storytelling campaign side of a video game related to Star Wars. If it doesn't have that, then I feel like I'm missing something, because I need to have those decisions that tell me whether or not I'm on the dark side or the light side.
Yeah, I mean, and just to think, I forget what year that came out, but it just felt so, you know, like video game wise, like you just didn't have anything quite that,
right?
That thing that would just like reflect your own humanity back at yourself.
Yeah, it's like, it's the art of storytelling. That's like, I think that's where like LucasArts and like all those things at that time, even like going back to like my, like you referenced Muppet Babies, but like, I feel like there was this time period back then that they were like very focused on like telling the whole kind of story. And I think there was also, there's some kind of Muppet and Lucas connection too, right? They used similar technology or something back then. Like all those, I feel like all those areas were kind of like lingering together, and they were all like helping each other out.
Yeah, that makes sense. It's all in the same world. Mm-hmm. It's even like like I was mentioning Hollow Knight earlier, and like that game, now things are one of the sophisticated parts of that game, which wouldn't have occurred if it wasn't for games like Jedi Knight, is that now there's things where it's like you can kill this person, but you don't have to.
Sure.
And you're not gonna, nobody's gonna judge you. You're not gonna be bad or good later. It's just whether you like, you know, Ryan, Sam, or Chris, whether you want to just do it right now or not, how you're gonna feel about it later in real life.
Yeah.
Like it's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, this idea, LucasArts was kind of at the forefront of this idea of like branching storytelling within like video games specifically. And it's like interesting because Star Wars was so, it's such a perfect kind of world to do that in. It's like all built in, you know, and it's kind of interesting because there's been so many Star Wars games, but a lot of people, aside from like Knights of the Old Republic or what you were speaking about, Jedi Knight, it's like so few have like really nailed it. Even though it seems like there are so many elements of Star Wars that would fit perfectly into like video game material. And it's like, we have all the, like, I found out a few years ago that like Shadows of the Empire isn't like a beloved game. And I was like, I assume this was the greatest thing ever, always.
Yeah, I'm so glad you brought that up because I forgot that that's like the other one. I think that's the only other one that I really outside of Battlefront, which I think a lot of people have at least played through a little bit. But yeah, Shadow. I mean, I don't know either. That was I read that at some point too, and it for me it felt way more, you know, ubiquitous than I guess what you're saying, which is what it actually was, and not. I didn't think it was like a cult thing, is what I'm saying.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, because when it came out, I was probably 10 or 11, and everyone I knew who had a Nintendo 64 had it. So I was just like, oh, this must be like, the biggest game in the world.
Yeah, this is just the game that everyone has.
And it was Star Wars, and it was the dopest.
Yeah. Right.
Have I replayed it? No. I don't think it would behoove me to do that.
Although that one had some good, like all the stuff on Hoth was really cool, and like the Asteroid stuff was really cool, and they also use like the same. I mean, they all use the same music, but for some reason, the music really struck me there. And also, like you really like the dude. Like you really want to know more about
Dash Rendar.
Dash Rendar.
Yeah, Dash Rendar.
What a name!
And that's the thing too, where it's just like with the movies, that's interesting that they haven't done it. Is there's so many Dash Rendars in the Star Wars universe. And I mean, I'd be very interested to see any of those stories cinematically.
Absolutely, yeah. I think like, kind of from you're an actor comedian, and from that perspective, you kind of like you talked a lot about like the choices that were in these games and stuff. Do you think you gravitate more towards that because you act and have to portray like lots of characters, so it makes you think about these choices?
I think it's more from a storyteller perspective.
Sure.
Because I do a fair amount of writing myself, and and you know, I'm kind of 50-50 with story versus strong story versus strong characters.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, you need both to make a perfect movie. But for me, I'm way more interested in something that has a very good story versus something that's just like a very character-driven thing, which I know sounds like the anti-actor answer, but I think what I'm trying to say is like, you know, something that I was always always baffled by with like something like Marvel movies is like with like the original, not the Marvel movies as we know them now, but the way they were back when like Sony was doing them or whoever, and it was just like you're trying to reinvent the wheel, whereas you can just go to just have a Rolodex of random Spider-Man issues and just, okay, Spider-Man 371, let's just make that into a movie.
Right.
Instead of being like, let's kind of like, you know, change the origin and bring in these different villains he didn't mean until later and then try to make like mismatch like all these things.
Right.
And I think that's my point is like with Star Wars, it feels a little bit like that too, where it's like, I know the safe route of like doing a Han Solo movie and all that is one thing, but then there's also like, you know, Darth Bane and like all these like other random series that cause the books are so deep.
Yeah.
And it's like, I think if you just made a good movie, people would watch it. They don't care if they've ever heard of Dash Rendar before.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm with you on that. Yeah.
Yeah. It's an interesting thing because now it seems like they're starting to possibly, I mean, it may have been derailed now because of the performance of Solo, but it seems like they're starting to kind of embrace that, you know, the extended universe kind of idea. And perhaps if Solo had done better, it'd be more hopeful to see a Dash Rendar movie. But we'll see with that. I don't know. It's an interesting thing. It's also, you touched on this is kind of tangential, but you were touching on like how we all assume, you know, how now Marvel movies are kind of adapted directly. You know, they just made an Infinity Gauntlet movie. That's insane.
Yeah,
and obviously,
it ever happened.
It took some liberties, but it's so funny because it's like, listen, kids. Well, you don't know. When we were growing up, when they said they were making an X-Men movie, we knew that their suits would look nothing like what we loved. Right. For no reason other than that they were like, we can't put that in a movie.
Right.
Now, when you hear they're making a Spider-Man movie, you know it's just going to look like Spider-Man. Right. We used to have a Cyclops that was just dressed in black leather. Why? I don't know.
They make a joke in the X-Men movie about like yellow spandex.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's like, wouldn't that be so stupid? This is stupid. That's like how they treat it.
Which one was that? X-Men First Class?
No, that was X-Men. That was the first X-Men.
X-Men.
From, the very first one.
Yeah, 2000.
Yeah, they learned a lot from those days. And I feel like, you know, the it's only a positive like way towards progression for these people, because they can, you know, they're so worried about, because I know, like, you know, the conversations about inclusivity and, you know, gender equality and all that stuff, it just helps them out if they do a person like a movie like Dash Rendar, for instance. Like, you know, if they're going to be like, Dash doesn't have, nobody knows who that is, yeah, except the five people that played Shadows of the Empire.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, there's such golden opportunity there to just to do casting in diverse ways, where it's like before that was not, we already know what the rest of the cast, who they are, right?
Well, yeah. And a cool thing that they, I think, like, part of the you know, alchemy that makes the current Marvel movies like work so well is that, like, when they're adapting something like Infinity War or Infinity Gauntlet to Infinity War, or when they adapt Civil War, I would argue it's like a true adaptation. Like, they're taking the essence of the story, they're taking a great story, and then they're making it work with the tools that they've set up in the cinematic world.
Yeah.
So it not only like takes the essence of a story that like they know works because it was hugely popular among the readership, but it also, like, as somebody who has read Civil War or has read Infinity Gauntlet, like, there's room for me to be surprised in small ways, or like to be impressed by how they did it or how they changed it without, like, I don't know. It's like it's that idea of like adapting the essence of it, or like taking the good part of the story. And I feel like, again, we'll stick with the Dash Rendar thing. Like, there's a way to do that with Shadows of the Empire and Dash Rendar, and say like, okay, so now that we've built up, you know, this really cool current world of Star Wars movies, we don't need to do a straight adaptation, you know, beat for beat from like this extended universe story, but what made that story cool? What sandbox was it playing in? What itch was it scratching? And then let's like introduce new characters and do that.
My God. If they made a Shadows of the Empire movie where like they just took the like skeleton of, you know, a smuggler buddy of Han Solo was tasked by Leia to like track him down while he was frozen in carbonite, like, that'd be a dope movie.
Yeah.
You know, like, and then you don't need to like incorporate CGI character, you know, you just see like a message from Leia that's blue, you know, that says like, please help us, and like moving on.
I have and a lump in my throat. I have a lump in my throat right now. This is so good. Yeah.
But it's interesting.
Swallow your water.
I like what you said, Sam, about the adaptation thing, because like we were talking about with the Marvel movies, and this applies to Star Wars too, but like comic book movies, it's like the pendulum has kind of finally swung into the middle of adaptation, because it used to be like what we were talking about with the X-Men movies and things like that, you know, every comic book movie before that too, that it was like, yeah, it's not really like the source material, really, aside from that they're using the names and the powers, but they won't give us the suits and stuff like that. And then it swung so far into like, you know, after Sin City did so well, and then Zack Snyder started doing like 300 and Watchmen and stuff, where there was zero adaptation. They were just like, oh, we just need to shoot the comic book. Mm-hmm. And then it kind of became abundantly clear that that wouldn't quite work either. And now they found this kind of perfect balance of like, we can take the source material, but it needs to work for a movie. And I think that Star Wars can do the same exact thing with all of these stories that they have.
Yeah.
That they've technically decanonized.
The Spider-Man movie is a good example of that, because it's the like Homecoming, rather, because it's not, that was a, as far as I know, I haven't read all, you know, 700 issues of Amazing Spider-Man or whatever it is, I don't think that was an adapted story, you know, with like, obviously he's fought the Vulture 10,000 times, but not right. not in this way with, you know, a Tesseract or whatever the hell that thing is. So it was just like nice to see, like, you guys have built this other world like from scratch in a very contemplative and patient way, that when you do just keep the core of who the characters are and what the grander situation is, then nobody is coming up in uproar for you not doing something that's like lifted directly from the books.
Yeah, because it feels right. It feels like Spider-Man.
Right.
You know, or like...
It's like almost like taking a lesson from what comic books do, and like you have different runs of the same character, but the essence is still like it crosses through.
Yeah, and I think now in thinking about Dash Rendar, as much as I was pro Dash Rendar movie 5 minutes ago, I think now that I think about it a little bit, it's like the thing that would be problematic with that would be the fact that it's still taking place within the same era that we've seen a million minutes of already.
Sure. Yeah.
So it's like, so it's like if you saw all the things of, like, I'd be more interested in, I don't know, just someone before that, because it's like we already know like so much of the Carbonite stuff and what other people were up to during that time that, like, you know, Rogue One already happened too. So, and they just did the solo movie. So it's like, I don't know, let's see what this guy Dash Rendar was doing to find Holland and be like, I don't know if I care about seeing another where's
right, yeah, because we know you find him.
But all I'm saying is if Solo had performed better and there was a Solo 2 or Scoundrels, the Star Wars story, there'd be Dash Rendar would appear in it. He'd be played by Miles Teller.
But by the time it would all be said and done, you would have every single minute from episode 3 to episode 4 screen. Right.
That's the goal. That's the goal. Yeah. Complete account full.
So Jonathan,
yeah.
On that note, would you rather see them go like way back into the past, like prequel era or further back, or like bring it way past what is, you know, I guess present day in the Star Wars world, but still a long time ago for us because of that thing they say in the beginning, but way into the future of that galaxy far, far away.
Yeah, that's a good question. Cause I think there's all of it is very, very rich. You know, cause the books, for instance, and I've only read a few, but they date back to, you know, millennia backwards. And it's like, it's just so much room to do, like, you know, even when it's old, it's new because the technology is so much more advanced than ours. And but maybe it wasn't. Maybe like they go back to a time where it's like there was only one kind of Earth place, you know, and it was before the races like all met each other across galaxies and stuff like that. But there was still a, you know, a force that was uniting all the beings on that planet. And you know, and I mean, guys, like, that sounds like a home run, and that just came out intense, I guess. But you can also do just, like, far, far into the future, just, like, something that's really apocalyptic or whatever, and or a new thriving society, I don't know, whatever, and it's just, like, I don't know, to just kind of be like, all right, so how do the Death Star plans get stolen? It's like, well, it's going to take 3 years to make this movie, so you shouldn't do anything else.
Do you guys think that Star Wars, because I think it's interesting the idea of going way into the future of the Star Wars universe, but do you think that they're a little trapped by whatever the legacy of the original trilogy and original characters will be from that? So what you said, post-apocalyptic in Star Wars, that's the first thing I thought when we were talking about going to the future. But then I'm thinking about how they have to then deal with the idea of, like, and this has, you know, we've talked about toxic fandom a lot, but then you have to deal with like all this uproars of fans of being like, well, then what did it even matter? Like what everything did, if everything was just going to end anyway, you know, like things like that. And it's like, I wonder if they're kind of trapped by that, that it's like, oh, there needs to be something definitive, because if we go into the future and everything's screwed up, then everybody's going to be like, the Skywalker saga didn't matter in the grand scheme of this universe. And then,
no, I don't think so. Because like you don't watch a movie about Vietnam and go like, what? Why did we even fight Hitler? You know, like you don't like discount like.
Whoa.
You don't discount. No, but you know what I mean. Like you don't like. I think.
No,
I mean,
I
agree. Fans would, but
no, I agree with you. But I'm saying, but I mean with the fan that's going to be like screaming about everything. It's like obviously it's because it's like, why should any of us do anything? We're just going to die someday. But it's like, you know, I just can foresee it being like, Luke saved the universe and now everything's post-apocalyptic, you know, like that kind of thing.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's something that I think Hollywood is trapped by a lot of times where they just, that's why they just kind of make the same stuff over and over again, because they know that a certain amount of it is going to hit with most people. And but then every once in a while you have a movie that comes out and is really disruptive and on paper wouldn't sell, and then it's amazing because people at the end of the day just want a good story. Mm-hmm. You know, so like if you could, I think if you make that story strong enough, whether it is apocalyptic or you know when the society is still thriving but it's 3,000 years from, you know, Luke or the Skywalker legacy, then it's like, I don't know, if it's good, it's good, and people are going to watch it and they're going to tell their friends to watch it. And I think people, there's a part of what them taking all the safe routes and doing, making the decisions that they're making currently, if I think is like what's fueling the fire of toxic fandom, because it's not different enough to make those people have to think about things in a different way.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's like just familiar enough.
That's an interesting thought, that it's like, yeah, that they're, that by playing so in such a similar sandbox, or like in the same sandbox, it's like it's immediately drawing comparisons and almost like validating what people expected or hoped to see, and then giving them reason to be disappointed when they don't see that.
Yeah, because all the things, like the amount of screen time that Darth Vader had was pretty minimal in the original trilogy, and it made the understatement of the year, a profound impact on our entire culture.
Right.
And then you're now all of a sudden tasking yourself with making prequels that will somehow show Anakin Skywalker in a way that everybody would be satisfied.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's like, I think it's an impossible thing. Like, there's no way to, like, the kid, it would have to be so far removed. Like the kid, everybody liked the kid. Yeah. But then once you start making him more of an adult, and it's like, nobody, like, who would that have to be, and how would he have to be for people to generally like it?
Right. Like, the man blew up a planet. Like, like, can't we just have him at that?
Yeah. Like, it's, and it's only truly satisfying, like, when you see him at the end of Rogue One actually being Darth Vader, possibly for the first time, really.
Right. Yeah.
Like, doing his powers at the fullest. And it's like, that's very satisfying, because that we haven't seen, but. And just capitalizing on things we have seen.
Yeah.
It's really interesting. That's a fascinating thing, because I love what they've done with the new trilogy with episode 7 and 8. But I do wonder if they had not included the original cast in it. You know, like when they originally said they were making new Star Wars movies, I assumed that the original cast would not be involved. Yes, you know, and it's like, I wonder if they had gone that route, if the movies would be less divisive, whether people like them or not, you know, the way that we're seeing
now. Yeah, you remove that comparison.
Not that I'm saying that would be better. I'm just curious if the reaction would be different, because it would be less recognizable.
Right.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, because I think there's few things outside of, I mean, the only things you could really compare to in terms of a reboot, like a prequel like Solo is, you know, when you're changing like the face of that character that everybody loves already is... Mm-hmm. You know, like a, you know, when there's a new Superman or there's a new James Bond, but even those things, it's just like everything is, it's just too, I don't know. I don't think it's quite the same thing, because it's just like, you didn't have Harrison Ford just played Solo last year or whatever it was.
Yeah.
Right.
And it just happened. And you know, to not spoil it for anybody who's listening to this, I'm sure you've seen episode 7.
Yeah. If you're listening to this, you're safe.
Yeah, and so but with his demise and stuff, it's like, that's still really raw for people, you know, whether you liked it or not. And it's like, now you're just all of a sudden gonna have this other dude play him, and it's like, I don't really care about this other dude, I don't think. Like, and his support's still alive, you know, so it's like, we just saw him. Whereas like with something like Bond, it's like, you just need him to do cool spy shit in a cool new location on the planet Earth somewhere, or not, or some other planet.
They took him to space, it's cool. but yeah, those also are always moving forward, and so it's like, it's an interesting comparison. It's a little bit of a different beast, but like, there's something about those characters like Batman or Superman or James Bond where it's like, the stories are always contemporary and always moving the story forward, that like might be a factor in it. Oh, go ahead. No, I was just like, you can kind of dissociate and like not have to in your brain like make one of them into the other. I mean, some people do that with James Bond, which is ludicrous. But like, the idea is like, you know, with each guy, it's like, this is the guy. This is the guy for James Bond now, as opposed to like, you don't have to think about like, oh, this is him when this is 10 years before Connery, you know, before he becomes, you know, or before Batman became, before, you know, Christian Bale is Batman before he was Michael Keaton, ? Like, no, you know, you don't do those like gymnastics that you like inherently have to when you're literally saying like, there's a lineage of like, this character is this person as a younger man or whatever.
Also, you know, a friend of mine equated you know, it's funny because, like, you know, as a nerd, I consume a lot of media, obviously. And so when I eventually heard that they were doing another Lethal Weapon, obviously I was like, why would you do that? And so it's kind of like hamstrung me when it comes to discussions about reboots, because, like, I'm a part of one.
Yeah, right.
And so, but I think the reason I bring it up is because, you know, someone explained to me pretty well where it's like, look, you don't ever call a new revival of Hamlet a reboot, and you're not, like, up in arms when some new person is playing Hamlet. It's the opposite. You're like, I want to see how this person does and how different they make it, you know, because nobody wants to do the same Hamlet over and over again, or else they would have stopped that years and years and years ago. And so as long as you do keep that, like we were speaking to this earlier, like, as long as you keep the essence of that, of whatever that thing is, and change enough, then you have both sides of the coin. You have new viewers and or audience members, and then you have also the same ones from before that are like, I'll stick around for this because it's a very cool, different way of doing this thing. And I think you possibly don't have that when you're doing, like, a prequel of the person, you know, or you do, then it's like, you have to do it enough stuff where it's not just like, hey, we're just filling in blanks. You have to see different blanks that you didn't even know existed.
Right. That's interesting. Yeah.
That's a great analogy.
Yeah. Cause it's kind of like now they're grasping for the prequel or sequel reboot. Like it's like a new type of two-headed beast. It's like, they want it to be a reboot and also a sequel. Like, it's very fascinating.
Yeah, it would have been different, I think, if they didn't choose to use Mark Hamill or Harrison Ford for episode 7. That would have been interesting too, if they're just like, we're just gonna do a different Han Solo and different Luke Skywalker. Like, obviously, a lot of people would have been like, "What?" But because they're still alive. But also, it's like, well, not if you just picked up from, you know, the end of the flourishing of the rebellion at the end of the 6, then people would have been fine with that, I think.
Yeah.
It's also, it would have established, again, I like what they've done, but this is a very interesting point that you're making, and it would have established, I think they would have had an easier time with movies like Solo if they had done something like that, because if you look at the prequels, we already accepted that Ewan McGregor and Alec Guinness were not the same person. You know, like, we already had things like that. So if they established this kind of language that between trilogies they were not going to be the same actors, then when they want to do a Solo movie, then it's not as difficult to be like, oh, it's a different actor. Right. You know, because it's like, oh, that's like a different, like, that's a different saga, or that's a different time period for this to be happening.
Maybe they're also too obsessed with, I mean, I guess now it doesn't really matter because they've had Solo and Rogue One, but maybe they might be too obsessed with trilogies. Like, you know, it would have been interesting to see episode 7 happen and just being like, we're just doing this because we can and we want to do a movie with these people.
Oh, that'd be wild. Yeah. It's like, Star Wars is kind of responsible for kind of creating that beast.
Well, at least we're going to get Harrison Ford in Indy 5.
Yeah. We'll do that. It'll be great. Jonathan, you obviously speak a lot about filmmaking and storytelling. You're working on a short film, Lillian.
Oh yeah.
Tell us a little more about that.
Yeah, this is my first true foray into the entire filmmaking experience. I wanted to write a short film that I starred in order to show people that a side of me that they haven't been able to see and I haven't had the opportunity to perform. Because usually, you know, I'm like the comedian or like the snarky goofballs, smart aleck guy that's in any situation. And but I wanted to really sink my teeth into something that was like pretty emotional and something that like spoke from my heart. And so I wrote this like 2-scene short film that took place in the time where like there was like my wife and I had been together for a long time, but there was a year that we were not together. And so there's 2 scenes that were pretty pivotal in that year that we were not together. And that's what the short film was about. So it's like a guy who's on a date and then his old flame calls him. And then he decides that he needs to speak with this old flame to see what their deal is. And it's nice because like, it was just a cool opportunity to write something that I knew super, super well. And my, My wife is an executive producer on it also, and she was able to counsel very heavily on it. And Stephanie Beatrice, who plays one of the cops on Brooklyn Nine-Nine, she plays my wife in the movie, or my now wife. And then Lyndon Smith, who's another very talented actress, she's in it as well. And Keisha Sharp, who plays Trish Murtaugh in Lethal Weapon, she directed it. And yeah, so it was like really cool to make that happen from like the ground up. And then all of a sudden, you know, we had one day of filming and I spent most of the day trying not to cry, just like looking around and seeing
right.
All these people are here to make my thing. And that's crazy. And I think people are really going to be excited to, or be very responsive to it when it eventually comes out, which should be, I mean, the goal is to have it premiere at a place like Sundance. Mm-hmm. But it's going to, we're going to have like a private premiere in a couple of weeks, which should be pretty cool.
That's amazing. That's great. Yeah. I think,
yeah, congrats.
Congrats with that. It, especially as someone that's like a lover of pop culture, a lover of media, like you mentioned, you just consume all of it, like a nerd, a movie nerd. And like to have something that you create to kind of put your, like your mark out there. That's phenomenal.
Yeah. Thank you. I really appreciate that. It's, yeah, it's very cool to, especially because like there's so many, I think good filmmakers really understand every facet of filmmaking and aren't just like a director that comes in and is just like, I just want my vision and that's it. I don't have no idea what a lens is. I've never heard that word before in my life.
You know?
So it's really cool to like, I didn't want to direct this thing because I was primarily focusing on just the on the performance aspect of it.
Sure.
And through that I was able to let go a little bit and also feel what that feels like, you know, like to share something with someone else where it's like now it's also Keisha's project and something that she wants to put her stamp on and feel proud of. And then also like the other producers that are involved too. So it's like, it was really interesting to collaborate on something like that, where it's like your idea from inception. And then you just kind of keep on, you know, giving shares of it to people.
Right.
And then seeing how, you know, I would say too, like the better filmmakers and showrunners and people of that echelon, like the better ones, they hear other people's ideas and they're like, all right, I'm going to do that because that's going to make my thing better. Instead of being like, well, I didn't come up with that, so it's not going to make it to my film. That's insane. And no good film has ever come from that, as far as I know. And so, it's just really cool to like learn all that stuff from the ground up, from like the outline all the way through. Now it's in sound design and scoring and visual effects. And like, we've been just trading a bunch of emails with notes and stuff. And I was just like, man, doing this and watching the same 12 minutes over and over again is one thing. How do you do that with like a 2-hour movie?
Right. But you kind of want to do it though.
Oh yeah, I do. Like, I currently started writing the feature version of Lillian because I want, like, as soon as it comes out and, you know, people are, hopefully they want to know more and know what happened. I want to have the feature finished and be like, well, here's the full script and give me all your money to make it.
that's the other part. That's phenomenal. Yeah, filmmaking and just kind of even like what we do here and this kind of love of Star Wars and movies in general. It's like it is all based on a collaborative shared experience, and it's such like a positive, great thing.
Yeah, and there's so many things that make it better, like, you know, especially on a thing like a film where, you know, the director a lot of times falls on the sword or runs away with all the glory, but which is always insane to me because just the amount of people that anybody who's ever visited a set, the first thing they said, or for the first time, the first thing they say is like, I can't believe how many people are here working on this. It's literally the first, it's that. And then the very close second is, I can't believe there's all this free food.
that's the exact order that works. So you're like, what do all these people do? And then you see craft services and you're like,
absolutely. Hey, and so it's really fascinating to me that, you know, it takes 300 people to make this thing on, you know, day to day. And then later on, who gets the Oscar? Just the director.
Right.
And it's crazy because it's just like so many people, like a lighting guy might give you or like a gaffer or whatever might give you a quick tip or saying like, this last film I did this and this might work for whatever, and he has his version of like the lighting setup, and the production designer has his or her own ideas and stuff. And it's just like, I mean, obviously they have Oscars for a lot of those categories, but it just feels like when something's successful, you don't talk about the grip department.
Right. Yeah. They don't get the Academy Award for best grip suggestion.
Yeah. So that's something that I really learned too on this, where it's just like, well, I want to make sure that I do everybody as proud as possible, because don't forget how many people it took to make it your movie.
Right. Exactly. I've often heard filmmaking equated to like how the masters built cathedrals back in the Renaissance. Like, it takes thousands of people that are all experts at what they do.
Totally.
And Jonathan, along with that, we wish you the best of luck with that. And next weekend, you're going to be at Comic-Con speaking of nerddom.
I got to go to San Diego for the first time last year, and I'll tell you why. I've been to New York Comic Con several times, and the one like Wizard Con or whatever it's called in Philly, and some other ones. And San Diego is like a whole other thing, man. It's crazy.
It's the major leagues.
It's nuts. It's like what I found. What I was shocked at the first time I went to San Diego Comic Con was I wasn't expecting everyone to be in such a good mood.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
It's like, you know, it's like interesting. I was like, it's going to be really crowded. People will probably be crabby. I live in New York City. I, you know, assume that like that's kind of what the vibe would be. But it's like everyone's bumping into each other, but everyone's like thrilled to be there.
Yeah.
It's a really like positive kind of environment, which was surprising to me.
I agree with that wholeheartedly. And it's just that's why it's so interesting that when that it's just like so nuts that it's just like you have to like really, like, I didn't think about that, what you just said. I didn't think about it once last year because I just kept on thinking about how crazy it was.
Right.
But then in retrospect, it's like, oh yeah, it was like a very positive environment and people are being pretty cool. Cause at the end of the day, you're just in a huge, huge room, filled with everything you'd ever want to look at ever.
Yeah.
next to people that are some of the only people that know what it is you're referencing.
It's pretty amazing. That's a special little setup.
Yeah. So I'm
looking forward to it. And you're not just attending, you are.
Yeah, moderating the Simpsons panel, which is insane.
Oh my God.
Yeah, and because I somehow have become friends with Al Jean, who's the showrunner, and he's been an EP on the, or he's been writing for the Simpsons since the beginning. And that dude is so great and so funny. And he, like, we had lunch at one point and he was like telling me all these like Gary Shandling stories because he used to write for Gary Shandling. I think the Gary Shandling show and Larry Sanders Show, but or maybe just one or the other, I forget. But either way, he's like, and he's also like an OG National Lampoon dude. Like,
wow.
Yeah, like from when it's like incepted. And so
he's the source.
Yeah. And essentially, eventually he asked me if I wanted to moderate this year because we saw each other at Comic-Con last year. And I've never done anything like that. And so I jumped on it, and I'm not sure who's going to be there quite yet, but I know some like Nancy was there last year, and Joe Mantegna was there last year too. And I keep on running into that guy. He gave me, like, I started golfing last year, and he gave me this, like, I don't know what it's called. the thing that you use to mark your golf ball when you're on the green.
Yeah.
Ball marker.
Yeah, and he gave me a one with like Fat Tony on it, and it's amazing. So there's been a lot of cool stuff with that. So I'm like just excited to be able to nerd out with those people on stage, and just like, honestly, like I've already made this joke 10 million times, but I don't mind making it again. Where it literally is going to be that Chris Farley sketch in SNL when he had the talk show, and he's just like, "Remember that thing you guys did? Oh man, that was awesome, man." It's just going to be that over and over again, basically.
There ain't nothing wrong with that. Yeah. With that, Jonathan, I think that about does it here for the droids. You could follow Jonathan at Jathan Prime on Instagram. We see it post a lot of Instagram. That's great.
Yeah, please do. Now I've whittled it down to caring only about one handle, and that's the one I see the most.
Good on you. That's hard to do. That's really hard to do. But guys, Mike, take us out.
Chris, I think you got it.
Did I do it? We kind of go through the intro.
Really stuck the landing there, Chris. I'm really practicing hard
here with the intros and the outros, Jonathan. That's why they're like, "Do you want me to?" I'm like, "No, I got the intro. Don't worry."
Chris is coming for all our jobs.
Just learning. See, I'm rounded. To go back.
I mean,
to
it, felt, it felt like an ending to me. I think.
Yeah, it's a little bit of an ending. Well, so we'll have. Thanks, Jonathan, for coming on. And
thanks, guys. I really
talking about what
thank
you. Got
you thank you.
Yeah, it's always awesome talking about this stuff in where it's like not really that serious a subject, but treating it seriously is always a lot of fun.
It's a blast. And that'll do it for the droids you're looking for. A Star Wars podcast.
These are the droids you're looking for.
This is madness.
Annie?